6. You're listening to WHYY.
I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. 2012 was a good year for movies. Take Steven Spielberg's film Lincoln. Here's Daniel Day-Lewis as President Lincoln talking with two clerks at the Telegraph office about Euclid as he awaits news of the war.
Euclid's first common notion is this: things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other. That's a rule of mathematical reasoning. It's true because it works, has done, and always will do. In his book, Euclid says this is self-evident. You see, there it is. Even in that 2,000-year-old book of mechanical law, it is a self-evident truth that things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other.
Silver Linings Playbook, set in the Philadelphia area, is about an obsessed Eagles fan named Pat Solitano, who's been released from a mental hospital. He's played by Bradley Cooper, and in this scene meets a young widow named Tiffany, who's got her own problems, and she's played by Jennifer Lawrence.
007. I'm your new quartermaster.
You must be too.
What meds are you on?
Me? None. I used to be on lithium and Seroquel and Abilify, but I don't take them anymore. No. They make me foggy, and they also make me bloated.
Yeah. I was on Xanax and Effexor, but I agree, it wasn't as sharp, so I stopped.
You ever take Klonopin?
Klonopin, yeah.
Right?
Jesus.
Like, is it what?
Yeah.
What day is it? How about Trazodone?
Trazodone?
Well, it flattens you out. I mean, you are done. It takes the light right out of your eye.
God, I bet it does.
Daniel Craig was back as 007 in Skyfall. Here he is meeting the new quartermaster, Q, played by Ben Whishaw.
007. I'm your new quartermaster.
You must be joking.
Why, because I'm not wearing a lab coat?
Because you still have spots.
My complexion is hardly relevant.
Your competence is.
Age is no guarantee of efficiency.
And youth is no guarantee of innovation.
I'll hazard I can do more damage on my laptop sitting in my pajamas before my first cup of Earl Grey than you can do in a year in the field.
Oh, so why do you need me?
Every now and then a trigger has to be pulled.
Or not pulled. It's hard to know which in your pajamas.
Well, it's that time of year on Radio Times. A look back at the movies of the year. And joining us once again are Gary Thompson, film critic for the Philadelphia Daily News. And Gary, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And Neil Oxman, the movie-obsessed head of the campaign group, is with us once again as well. And Neil, nice to have you with us on Radio Times, especially talking about movies.
Thanks, Marty.
So was it a good year from your perspective? I know you saw 181 movies, Neil.
Yeah, it was. I think there were probably 30 movies that I saw this year that I could have put on a top 10 list. There were almost 10 great documentaries that I could have put on a top 10 list. And clearly there were a range of great films, from dramas to the biopics like Lincoln to just fun movies that and comedies that I thought merited something for everybody out there.
I was going to say something for everyone, including people of all ages, Gary.
I thought it was an exceptional year. If you just look at attendance numbers, for instance, they're way up.
People are going to the movies.
Yeah, sure. And that's usually, you know, they make a little more money every year. Attendance has been going down, you know, for the last couple of years. And I think it's because Hollywood didn't do just a good job of hitting its four major demographic quadrants. They really did a good job of bringing us substantial entertainment, even under the guise of like a tentpole picture, like The Avengers even, or The Hunger Games, or a movie that I put on my top 10 list for teens called Chronicle. These were movies that really engaged and challenged their audiences, even in the guise of a genre picture. In your intro, you have Skyfall. There's even a really good Bond movie this year. So, yeah, it was a way above average.
Well, speaking of top 10 lists, Neil, what's on your list?
Beast of the Southern Wild, which I thought for first-time movie makers and non-actor actors was one of the most extraordinary movies I've ever seen made. Argo, Ben Affleck, his third feature, has really hit a home run there. Lincoln, what can you say? And including some of the, I think, amazing smaller roles there. The vote getters in Lincoln, played by Tim Blake Nelson, yeah. John Hawkes, and James Spader.
I figured you would like that.
Silver Linings Playbook. I think that if it weren't for Lincoln, Bradley Cooper could even win an Academy Award, and Jennifer Lawrence, from the middle of that movie, carries that movie and just blows everybody away. A movie that I really championed this year and wrote hundreds of emails to people searching for Sugar Man. I think the funniest movie of the year, which is not necessarily an NPR audience, Ted, which I always
have
on.
Ted.
I mean, I think Ted was absolutely hysterical. A movie, two movies that I put in one category. One, both starred Mark Duplass. One of which is Rosemary, also stars Rosemary DeWitt, who will star in the Marty Moskowitz story. The two movies are Your Sister's Sister and Safety Not Guaranteed. Two charming little independent films. An East German movie that I saw this year at the Philadelphia Film Festival that will open nationally soon, called Barbara. A small movie called Robot and Frank, starring Frank Langella, which I thought was terrific. And a movie that's on every critic's list that could be the best movie of the year, and it was my favorite movie this year, called Zero Dark Thirty, about the killing of Bin Laden, starring Jessica Chastain, and I think she's just unbelievable.
What's on your list?
Okay, I'll just run through them in more or less alphabetical order. Beasts of the Southern Wild, Bernie, the Richard Linklater movie with Jack Black, Chronicle, as I mentioned, Flight, Robert Zemeckis' picture with Denzel, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Seven Psychopaths, Searching for Sugar Man, Silver Lining Playbook, and Zero Dark Thirty.
And my list, and I kept putting things, moving things around and moving them on and off, but I've ended up with Beasts of the Summer Wild, Lincoln, Zero Dark Thirty, The Master, Moonrise Kingdom, Anna Karenina, Silver Linings. I loved Looper, and I loved Bernie, and I also loved Skyfall.
Okay.
Kind of a mixed bag here. We want to know what movies you enjoyed, so do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Neil, you and I were
I agree with a lot of those, even though they're, except for one, The Master. I thought the acting was extraordinary from the three leads, Amy Adams, and of course Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman. Right. But I didn't think there was any there. I mean, the movie left me cold.
There's a scene in the movie. I was riveted by it for at least an hour.
I'm disturbed by it.
Yes,
and there's
a
scene in the movie where Phoenix hops on a motorcycle and just takes off. And to me, that's when I left the picture. I didn't understand the ending. I can't wait to watch it again, though. Mm-hmm. I kind of have a feeling that it's the sort of movie that will invite repeat viewing. And I have to say that my favorite scene of the year, just individual scene, where Philip Seymour Hoffman as a cult leader is having his first reading with Joaquin Phoenix. And he's got this really riveting combination of salesmanship and psychoanalysis, and you see that veil of cynicism drop.
And psychopathy on top of that.
Right. You see that veil of cynicism drop in Phoenix's character, and he starts to make maybe that journey. That, I just thought, was the best piece of acting I've seen in a long time.
And that kind of acting just sustained me through the film.
Joaquin Phoenix was engrossed. The way his posture was, and I mean, it looked like he had a kidney stone through the entire movie, but I thought he was extraordinary. But as the picture just didn't do it for me for some reason.
Well, let me play a clip, and this is from Moonrise Kingdom. It was on my list.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Whenever three movie lovers gather together, somebody has to be a gushing fan of Wes Anderson.
Oh, so. I'm a gushing fan of Wes Anderson. I absolutely adored this film. And this is a scene from this summer camp, Ivanhoe. 12-year-old Sam Schakowsky has run away. He is in love, we should say. And this is Ed Norton as Scoutmaster Randy Ward leading the campers in search for Sam. Let's listen.
Use the orienteering and pathfinding skills that you've been practicing all summer. Let's find our man, bring him safely back to camp. Remember, this isn't just a search party. It's a chance to do some first-class scouting. Any questions? Lazy Eye.
What's your real job, sir?
I'm a math teacher. Why?
What grade?
Eighth.
You need PhD for that?
Lazy Eye, no. But you know what? We're actually in the middle of something here, in case you didn't notice. One of our scouts is missing, and that's a crisis. Anybody else? Redford.
What if he resists?
Who?
Schakowsky. Are we allowed to use force on him?
No, you're not. This is a non-violent rescue operation. Your mission is to find him, not to hurt him under any circumstances. Am I making myself understood?
Sure.
Good. I'm going to change my answer, in fact. This is my real job. Scoutmaster, Troop 55. A math teacher on the side.
And that's a scene from Moonrise Kingdom. I have to say that I was laughing during that, and my two guests were sitting there stone serious.
No.
I know.
Go ahead, Gary. I thought it was a return to form for him, for me. I think what I sort of started to realize about Wes Anderson is that the younger his characters are, the more I tend to like his movies. I think he's very good at connecting with the childhood experience. And Neil, what did you think?
No, yeah. I like all his films. It was a top 20 movie for me. I just didn't put it on the top 10. No, I really like him. I'm glad he's making movies.
Well, and I always appreciate when a director can create a universe, you know, a world that I've never been to, with a certain kind of look. His detail for things like record players and even the color of the film was just so unusual. Well,
there was something about this. I mean, I think they talked about it. Gary might have in his review. It was sort of like the Fantastic Mr. Fox. It was sort of very two-dimensional, not three-dimensional, a certain way, the way it was shot.
What I realized when I saw Fantastic Mr. Fox is because he's so good at creating these little miniature worlds that he's so well-suited to animation.
Yeah.
Again, plays to his strength because he's so good at creating these miniature worlds, and this story really fit in perfectly with that.
Let me ask you about some of the directors that were directing this year. Gary, I'll toss this first to you. We've been talking about Wes Anderson. Then you've got Paul Thomas Anderson with The Master, Joe Wright with Anna Karenina, David O. Russell with Silver Linings, Quentin Tarantino with Django. I mean, we do have some very interesting movie directors that are making really interesting movies.
Look at how smart Hollywood was with the holiday season, where they're coming at you with Peter Jackson, with Steven Spielberg, with Robert Zemeckis, and let's throw David O. Russell and Catherine Bigelow in there.
Right.
And it's not just what Peter Jackson's doing, which is giving...
He directed The Hobbit.
Right. Who directed The Hobbit. He's serving this massive constituency. It wasn't my favorite movie, but I recognize that he's really hitting his target audience well. It's guys like Zemeckis who are bringing us entertainment, which is made to challenge us. To me, that movie...
Flight,
starring Washington, is a movie that's exploring the lost link in our culture between leadership and accountability, and doing so brilliantly. I'd really love that. I'd put it really very close to the top of my list. And there's a movie that I think you didn't put on your list, but you thought about, which is this documentary, How to Survive a Plague.
Oh, it was my favorite. I mean, not counting Searching for Sugar Man, it was clearly the best documentary of the year, I thought.
The ACT UP activists who worked so hard to draw attention to the issue, to get government funding for AIDS research, to pressure the pharmaceutical companies.
With mostly old footage shot in the 70s when the AIDS plague started.
The thing that was so powerful to me was at the end of the movie, you have those who survived, the activists, talking about not just what they did that worked, but their failures.
Wow.
And again, this gets back to this issue of accountability, how much you can learn from things that you did wrong, which to me is so missing in our culture right now.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about movies today in this hour of Radio Time, something we do at the end of just about every year, talking with Gary Thompson, film critic for the Philadelphia Daily News, and with Neil Oxman. He's head of the campaign group, saw 181 movies this year. That's low for him. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What movies would you recommend? Give us a call 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The University of Pennsylvania supports WHYY. Are you drinking more than you want to? Would you like to reduce your drinking? UPenn is conducting a 13-week research study of a medication to help people reduce their drinking. To participate, you must be 18 to 65 and a regular drinker. The study provides a medical evaluation, including blood tests, brief counseling, and monitoring of your drinking. Details at 215-222-3200, extension 241. 215-222-3200, extension 241.
It's New Year's Eve, and your last chance to give a 2012 tax-deductible gift to WHYY. Your support of in-depth journalism is an investment in the future, an investment in remarkable radio and web features that fuel your day and your imagination. Please make your year-end tax-deductible gift to WHYY right now. Visit whyy.org/support. From everyone here at WHYY, we thank you for your continued support.
Music fans know a mixtape is much more than just a collection of songs. And here at Sound Opinions, it's our way to reflect back on a year of great music. I'm Greg Kott.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. This week on Sound Opinions, Greg and I share our end-of-year mixtapes and give you the perfect soundtrack to kick off 2013. I used to sell mixtapes,
but now I'm an MC. Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Gary Thompson and Neil Oxman about some of the movies that we enjoyed this year. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to play a clip from Beasts of the Summer Wild, and this is probably on everybody's list. It's about a six-year-old little girl named Hush Puppy, played by Quvenzhané Wallace, and the townspeople from the soggy Louisiana Delta community called Bathtub, talking about building a refuge after a devastating hurricane. Let's listen.
It wasn't no time to sit around crying like a bunch of babies. We're gonna make a camp right on top of the bathtub. Enough animals to eat until the water goes down.
And again, a scene from Beasts of the Summer Wild, and quite an extraordinary performance from a little girl, a six-year-old little girl. Apparently, Neil had never acted before.
Right, and her father, Dwight Henry, had never acted. I mean, I probably cried for half that movie. It was so moving. I mean, it was just extraordinary.
And again, talking about creating a universe, a whole world that looks like just itself, Gary.
Right, and also what struck me was like every third or fourth movie now invokes this theme of the apocalypse, and this one does too. These people living on the edge of catastrophe out there in this barrier island. But what was so refreshing to me was the movie's attitude towards this. And you hear it in the clip. Mm-hmm. There's no use sitting around crying like a bunch of babies. They actually use a different word in the movie, which is far harsher, that we can't say on the air. And that was what I found so moving at the end. If this little orphan girl with her little sparkler can walk courageously into the future, maybe we can as well.
Well, and it's nice to see a little orphan girl that holds a movie together and even narrates it.
And how about this being a really good year for strong female characters? The fact that she's, what, 8 or 9 wasn't any impediment to her.
No, she was 6 when she made the movie.
Right. And you can throw Zero Dark Thirty in there. You can throw The Hunger Games in there. Jennifer Lawrence, really the catalyst in Silver Linings Playbook as well. So, yeah, really good year in that respect.
Let me get some callers in, and then we're going to play a scene from Django Unchained after that. But first, let's see what Charles from Westchester has to say. And, Charles, go ahead.
Hi, Marty. Hi. Big fan of the show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to throw in my recommendation for this year. It was a small film called Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. With Steve Carell and Keira Knightley, I thought the two of them had great on-screen chemistry. And I also thought that the movie really allowed you to feel what was going on rather than being told what to feel what was going on. And the culmination of that whole movie and everything that happened at the end really just made me sit back and say, wow. And that's very rare for movies these days.
Well, that's great. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Gary, do you know this movie?
Oh, sure. As I was just saying, every third movie seems to invoke the apocalypse in some fashion or other. Here's this man and this woman forging an unusual relationship as the clock is ticking down. I didn't see the same kind of chemistry in among the two leads as he did, but you'll never get me to say a bad word about Keira Knightley. So, yeah. Neil, what did you think?
I liked the movie. I mean, I'm surprised it didn't do better than it did. I think people thought it was flawed, but I liked both of them together. I thought they were fine. It was an interesting little movie.
And speaking of Keira Knightley, what did you make of Anna Karenina, Gary?
I love the movie's ambition, and I actually like Joe Wright a lot.
Me too.
He's one of my favorite
Hannah.
Directors. Sometimes I like him more for what he attempts and what he achieves. You know, this movie, I understood the idea of the artifice and in invoking the stage setups and theatricality as a way of making a commentary on the society, but I didn't respond to the characters as strongly as I might have.
Oh, that's interesting. So, I thought it was beautiful.
And
one of the most beautiful movies I've seen.
Unquestionably. Sometimes with him, I feel as though, as with Atonement, that to me, it gets in the way of the story and characters a little bit, but I invite people to take a look at The Soloist, the movie that he made with with Jamie Foxx, which I think is a really overlooked modern classic.
Did you see Anna Karenina?
Yeah, I hate all that Russian junk. but I did think it was
tragic.
I think it was. Yeah, I mean, and I was telling somebody at lunch yesterday, my actor friend David Morse, who lives here in Philly, we're having lunch that I've never seen Dr. Zhivago. I mean, it's one of the few on the AFI top 100 movies of all time that I've never seen, but. It was
something
okay.
against Russian novels and Russian stories.
I don't understand. Now it's sort of like all Ibsen and Chekhov. These guys need a sense of humor.
Sort of in the same category, though. Movies that whose ambition I admired more than the achievement. I would throw Cloud Atlas in there. It's a movie that ended up on a lot of top 10 lists, and yeah. I know a lot of people personally loved it. I didn't really get it, but I love the fact that the Wachowskis and right. Tickver made that attempt. And there's a lot of really, you know, Hollywood. Movies in general tend to be kind of regarded as a spiritual, religious wasteland. There were a lot of movies this year like The Master, like Life of Pi, like Cloud Atlas. I would even throw Bernie in there.
Love
that
Bernie.
Really,
well, Life of Pi.
And The Sessions also.
Oh, The Sessions was great.
Right.
I mean, John Hawkes is clearly going to get nominated for an Academy Award for The
Sessions. Which takes religion and spirituality very
right.
seriously.
But, I mean, Life of Pi was much more accessible to... First of all, when I went in, I didn't realize it's a 3D movie.
Right.
I had no idea. But it's much more accessible than Cloud Atlas. I mean, for a lot of people, Cloud Atlas
is not
understandable.
I'm sort of throwing Life of Pi on my list as a representative
right.
of that whole group of
no,
movies.
I understand.
And I think that it's just more assured, you know,
right.
in terms of its direction from Ang Lee than some of the others.
Well, speaking of Jamie Foxx, I want to play a clip from Django Unchained. Of course, this is Quentin Tarantino's contribution this year. Jamie Foxx playing this slave bought by a bounty hunter, Dr. King Schultz, played by Christopher Waltz. Here they are talking about their work, and their plan is to rescue Django's wife from a plantation. The plantation is called Candyland, and they're going to infiltrate the place. Let's listen.
You mind telling me what the hell are you doing?
I confirmed that Cornelia's at Candyland.
Sure as hell.
He didn't call her by name, but she's a young lady, whip marks on her back, and speaks German. Now, while it's not wise to assume in this instance, I think it's pretty safe. Point being, don't get so carried away with your retribution. You lose sight of why we're here.
You think I lost sight of that?
Yes, I do. Stop antagonizing Candy.
I'm not antagonizing. I'm intriguing him.
You're yelling abuse at these poor slaves?
I would call the man... who had me kill another man in front of his son, and he didn't bat an eye. You remember that?
Yeah, of course I remember.
What you said was that this is my world. And in my world, you gotta get dirty. So that's what I'm doing. I'm getting dirty.
And again, a scene from Django Unchained. And Neil, you and I think we're putting this movie on and off our list.
So it was number 11 on my list. yeah, I liked it. I mean, I like Quentin Tarantino. I like him. Mean, he's only made – he considers him the fact that he's only made 7 movies because he thinks Kill Bill 1 and 2 is one movie. So
right.
he doesn't make that many movies for a director that's really talked about. And I like some of the language in the movie. I mean, I think he's still a good writer. And it had – Gary is much more of a movie student than I am. I mean, it was sort of Sam Peckinpah-like with its violence. But it just missed my top 10 list.
I mean, there was something both cartoonish and scary and, you know, Monty Python-esque.
Cartoonish is a good word. I mean, I like Tarantino a lot, but I like him a little less when he takes his crazy postmodern roadshow to – subjects like the Holocaust or like
well, you didn't
slavery.
Like Inglorious Bastards?
I like that. It made
me
a little queasy. It's not that I didn't like it, but right. there's a whole body of critical writing devoted to the idea that when you invoke something like the Holocaust, you really need to honor the historical reality or don't even bother doing it. Now, I'm persuaded by those arguments. Having said that, I get that. These movies are so far removed right. from any actual reality that metric probably doesn't really apply. Still, though, when we get to the end, when we're killing the fake Hitler or blowing up the fake slavery plantation, I find that resistible, if that makes any sense.
It does, actually. That's Gary Thompson, film critic for the Philadelphia
Why did
Daily
you
News.
Why did you take it off your list, Marty?
I was both... both intrigued by it, entertained. I was also frustrated with it. My concern was because Quentin Tarantino in Inglourious Basterds, which I adored, I have to say, Gary, there were just those masterful scenes that seemed to go on forever and all the tension was building. My concern in Django was that that has become is going to become a cliche for him. You're going to have Christopher Waltz these right. dinner scenes and that just seem to go on
but
forever.
I like what Neil said off the air, which was you think that he wrote this just to give Waltz right, another soapbox absolutely. For giving another hilarious performance.
No, I agree. Yeah. I think because he said, and he also wrote a lot of the dialogue just for Samuel Jackson. I mean, just right. to hear him speak.
Right, and it's fun to hear them speak. I mean, right. I do.
Well, let me throw out another name. I put this movie Seven Psychopaths on my list, which is directed by this guy Martin McDonagh, who I think is a really interesting new voice in cinema, Anglo-Irish playwright who's done some fine work in theater. He made In Bruges a couple years ago, which is a movie that I saw and I liked. And I started watching it again and again, and it really reveals itself with repeat viewing. I have a feeling this movie's kind of the same thing. Now, I bring him up because he's been compared to Tarantino. They have wildly inventive plotting and use of language. But this guy is much more conflicted about his attraction to violent imagery, which is the subject of this movie. Hilariously conflicted about his attraction to violent imagery. And just real quick, the story's Colin Farrell plays this Irish screenwriter who's making his first Hollywood movie. He wants to make it about psychopaths. He interviews psychopaths, and they end up writing the story for him, and it gets way out of control.
But it's also not 2 hours and 46 minutes.
That's true.
You know, it's a little more watchable than that.
Right. And it has Christopher Walken in it, too.
It's out on DVD, I think, in 2 weeks. If you didn't see it in theaters and you have a stomach for it, I would advise you to check it out.
Let me say this again. That's Gary Thompson, film critic for the Philadelphia Daily News. Also with us, Neil Oxman, head of the campaign group and someone who loves movies. And we tend to bring these two guys together at the very end of the year to talk about the movies of the year. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What movies would you recommend this year? Let me see what Ron from Wynwood has to say. And Ron, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello?
Hi there. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I saw a film that I thought was extraordinary called The Other Son, or the French title, which was even better, was called The Son of the Other, about two children switched at birth in a Haifa hospital in 1992 during the bombing. One a Palestinian child, one an Israeli child. And they find out when they're 18, living in the two sections of what is the Israel and the West Bank. And the parents find out that they were switched. And it's a very moving story.
It
because
sounds fascinating.
The sons don't know what they are anymore. Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. Did anyone here see this? I'm
no,
looking at.
Speaking of documentaries, I mean, I did this.
Thank you,
list.
Ron, for the call. We're putting that on our list here.
How to Survive a Plague, The Imposter, Undefeated, Hero Dreams of Sushi, The Flat, The Queen of Versailles, Chasing Ice, Detropia. I mean, there were really, really good
Central Park Five,
yes.
I like Queen of Versailles, but yeah, the list goes on and on.
Can I add a couple of more documentaries to that list? One is the Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry, about the political artist who is just sticking it to the Chinese government in his very creative way. Another movie that I loved called Beauty is Embarrassing. It's about Wayne White, who did, he's a puppeteer, did a lot of the sets for that will come back to me. And Brooklyn Castle, which is about chess players of middle school. Great kids, great teachers, great families, heroic story.
Yeah, and also
Pee Wee Herman. He did a lot of the sets for Pee Wee Herman.
I was going to say I don't remember Pee Wee Herman from Brooklyn Castle.
But, no, that goes back to Beauty is
Embarrassing. I didn't know he was a chess player. Okay,
fair enough. Let me see what Fritz says from Allentown. Fritz, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
This movie got mentioned in your discussions, but I don't think it made anybody's top 10 list, which really kind of surprised me. It's The Sessions. What a beautiful, touching story. John Hawkes plays the poor fellow who's confined to an iron lung, wants to have sex. A very, very touching performance by Helen Hunt as the sexual surrogate, and a very, very funny performance by William H. Macy as his priest, who more or less gives him permission to have sex. It was just very, very touching movie.
Yeah, I totally agree. I could easily have put it on my top 10 list. You know, we talked about the problem of there being so many good movies, you can't fit them all on there. And I sort of dropped it in my category of movies that were religiously serious, because what was so interesting to me about the movie was the way they framed his desire to have sex with a woman as something he needed to place within his very devout Catholic faith. So the first thing he does is consult with William H. Macy, you know, about how they could maybe make this work. And, you know,
gets
Macy's
his blessing,
right,
essentially.
Tries to. Yeah, and does, I guess, in effect. And what was so nice about the movie was that they managed to make these scenes serious, earnest, and also very funny,
right,
Neil?
I think that if, I think that everybody assumes that
Hawks will get a nomination.
Well, no, but that if Daniel Day-Lewis wasn't in Lincoln this year, that I think John Hawks could be. Right. I mean, he would be a very strong contender for Best Actor. I mean, I assume Lewis is going to win, but I gotta believe John Hawks is going to get a nomination.
Yeah. I like my man Denzel, but okay, yeah.
No, I think Denzel will. You know, right, certainly on the list with Bradley.
I
gotta
tell you, I thought Jack Black was great in Bernie too.
I'm glad you said that.
No, he was.
I know
he
a lot
was.
Of people don't like Jack Black, but if you don't like Jack Black and you didn't see this movie, I'd urge you to give it a chance.
I am absolutely shocked that Shirley MacLaine agreed to do this with Jack Black. I mean, I really,
let's
you know,
say she does not come across too well.
You know, I mean, given the fact she's going to be in Downton Abbey for season 3 starting next Sunday.
But let me just say to Fritz, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And again, you can call as well. Tell us about a movie that you love this year. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. My little problem with the sessions was I wanted to know more about those characters. And perhaps I was just being too stubbornly psychological, but I wanted a little more backstory on both of them. I wanted to know a little more about her marriage.
Well, you saw about her marriage. I mean, he's, what was he, a sort of failed
something,
college professor, whatever he was. I mean, clearly, I don't think they were happy.
No, but I just wanted a little more.
You wanted
something.
This
some
is
backstory.
40 from that marriage. You want to really get down and dirty?
She hasn't been in a lot of movies lately. I mean, she was in that surfing movie last year, and you know, for a woman who's won an Academy Award, and
true.
You know, and I loved her, but she,
and
has
she takes her clothes off.
Yes,
which is,
for
know.
Somebody, and she looks great for a woman in her mid-40s who's not afraid to do that in Hollywood, and I thought she was great.
Yeah, but what's so interesting about those scenes, I hate to keep hammering on that, you know, religious angle, what's so moving about those scenes is the context that they're placed in. It's become sensational as a movie in which Helen Hunt is
right.
naked throughout the entire thing, but when the consummation actually occurs, it's so meaningful on a many different
right.
levels. So that's, I think that's what gives the movie its strength.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, play some more clips as well. We're talking about some of the movies that we enjoyed in the year 2012, talking with Neil Oxman, head of the campaign group here in Philadelphia, saw 181 movies this year. Also with us, Gary Thompson, film critic for the Philadelphia Daily News, and just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We celebrated our 25th anniversary this year. On the next Fresh Air, we end the year with our special anniversary show. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
For many people, New Year's Eve is the occasion to dress up and step out. But for many African-American men, every day is the day to show their style.
For some of us, it's just a way of being more present. And it was a quicker way to really sort of step up.
And historian and one of NPR's own on the history of black style. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
What
What do you want for your life? Many of us choose one path and want another, maybe one that's more creative, altruistic, or legacy-making. Making the switch can be scary and complex, but with careful planning and reflection, we gain clarity and confidence, and ultimately a new purpose. On the next Voices in the Family with Dan Gottlieb, transitioning, opening up to what's next. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. Again, talking with Gary Thompson and Neil Oxman about some of the movies that we enjoyed this year. And we have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me play a scene from another film that is on some people's best movies of the year list. And this is a scene from Argo. Tony Mendez, played by Ben Affleck, who also directed the film, comes back to Tehran from Hollywood, and he's giving Canadians their fake backstories as members of the film crew, and this, of course, is to get them out of Iran after the revolution. Here he is testing them in preparation for their escape.
Where is your passport issued?
Vancouver.
Where were you born?
Toronto.
Toronto. Canadians don't pronounce the T.
Some Comité guard is actually going to know that.
If you're detained for questioning, they will bring in someone who knows that. Yes. Mary, who are the last three prime ministers of Canada?
Trudeau, Pearson, and Diefenbaker.
What's your father's name?
Howard.
What's his occupation?
Fisherman.
Where were you born?
Halifax, Nova Scotia.
What's your date of birth?
February 21st, 1952.
Good. What's your job on the movie?
Producer.
Associate producer. What was the last movie you produced?
High and Dry.
Who paid for that?
CFDC.
What's your middle name? What's your middle name?
Leon?
Shoot him. He's an American spy. Look, they're going to try to break you, okay? By trying to get you agitated. You have to know your resume back to front.
You really believe your little story is going to make a difference when there's a gun to our heads?
I think my story is the only thing between you and a gun to your head.
And again, a scene from Argo. Neil, did you like Argo?
I loved it. I put it on my list. I mean, I think Ben Affleck has become a better director than he was an actor, although he was good in this.
I think he's definitely found himself as a director.
But I think, and I think John Goodman and Alan Arkin, as the guys in Hollywood, were just wonderful in this movie. I mean, John Goodman was great in Flight, too. But I really like John Goodman and Alan Arkin in this.
See, I find him a distraction, John Goodman on the screen. I get distracted.
You didn't
by
like him.
Him
in the role that he had, though, where he was out there in Hollywood and trying to, fake.
It was fun. He's sort of.
He was a distraction in Flight in a certain way.
He was. Over the top.
Right, he was over the top. But
did he make. Was Argo on your list? I don't remember.
That wasn't on my list. I really liked it. It just didn't, for whatever reason, stay with me the way I actually was hoping that it would.
You know, it's funny when I liked it, considered putting it on my top 10 list, and then when you see Zero Dark 30,
right.
Also, it just seems like it maybe doesn't rise to that level. I know it's a completely different
set
of priorities.
But I will tell you, I mean, when you saw Argo, you were on the edge of your seat. I mean, you knew what happened in the end,
right.
You know, but you were on the edge of your seat the whole time. I mean, it was suspenseful.
Right. I think that, you know, after comparing it to Zero Dark 30, I might want to call it more of a piece of pop entertainment. And if I were going to pick a movie like that, I think I'd probably go with Looper. Did you guys see that?
I loved Looper.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Loved it. Let me get Mike from Doylestown to join us on Radio Times. Mike, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. That would be number 4? Nope, we don't have him. Let's try number 3. It looks like Steve from Ocean City. And Steve, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the air.
Yes, there were two films that I haven't heard mentioned. One was called The History and Art of Rap, which was narrated by Ice-T, and I didn't know anything about rap, and I really appreciated what that musical form was all about after seeing it. And the other one was a beautiful documentary on the life of Bob Marley.
Oh, interesting. Are these new movies, Steve?
They are this year, I believe, unless the years have blended together on me again.
Because rap's been around a while, but no, that's interesting.
Well, I didn't see either of them. Our music critic, John Take, did the Marley picture and loved it. And where did you see the history of rap?
The Ritz.
The Ritz.
And
Well, I'm sorry to say it came and went without my even noticing it, which unfortunately is true of so many titles. But, Neil?
Yeah, I mean, I know I missed the Marley movie, and I'm upset I missed it because there was some revelations in it that were, you know, that one of his parents was white, which is just revealed in the middle of the movie, and everybody I know who saw it did love it. And
thanks for that spoiler.
Well, it's gone. And the rat movie, or his mother was white, or what? You know.
Next, you're going to tell us Bin Laden dies at the end of Zero Dark Thirty. Anyway. Okay.
Steve, I appreciate those two suggestions. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's see what Darko from Wilmington has to say. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
One small movie last year, I know it was hyped a lot by NPR, was Sleepwalk With Me.
Sleepwalk With Me, yes.
And one reason I loved the movie was one of the local actors from Philly, James Redhorn, had a small role in it, but he was absolutely fabulous. It was a comedy role for him, and I thought he carried the movie.
Oh, that's good.
It stayed with you. It was something, right. For me at least, it was a bit like...
I liked it a lot.
Came out a couple of years ago.
Which was that, Darko?
In the Loop.
In the Loop?
Oh, that was a couple of years ago,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago. I mean, it's one of those movies that I know is a complete different type of movie, but it just stays with you. I mean, little bits and pieces always come back to you.
Well, I really liked Sleepwalk With Me a lot, and I can't remember the name of the comedian upon whose life
is named.
Mike Birbiglia. But it sort of belongs in this category of very culturally useful movies, which take a more realistic look at relationships, and rom-coms typically do. I think you can throw This Is 40 in that category. Yeah, I really got a kick out of it.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me get one more caller on, and then I do want to play a little bit of music from Les Mis. And we have, looks like, Wendy from Center City, Philadelphia, joining us on Radio Times. And Wendy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. Yes, a film that I just saw actually on Christmas Eve, Rust and Bone, French film.
I saw it in London in November. It stars Marion Cotillard. Is that how you say her name?
Cotillard.
I think so, yes.
And a Belgian actor from a movie I also saw in London this year called Bullhead, which I really liked. And I thought it was a really good movie, although I've seen some people make fun of it and put it on a worse list, which I was sort of stunned
by. Interesting. Now I have to see it.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I liked it.
Wendy, why did you like it?
I found it very powerful, and I just had no idea where it was going. So as soon as you thought you knew where it was going to go next, it went somewhere else, and I found it sort of very wrenching emotionally. Just a very unusual story, astonishing story.
With Cotillard, who's always an interesting actor or actress to look at. Wendy, thanks for the call. Thanks for the suggestion as well. Neil, did you want to add something?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Let me play a scene from Les Mis, and that's sometimes this is on people's best list. I've also noticed on people's worst list. I think it kind of depends on whether you like the musical or not. But this is Anne Hathaway playing the tragic Fantine in the film adaptation of the Broadway musical. The film is called Les Miserables, and here she is singing I Dreamed a Dream, filmed in just one take. And this, just so you know, it is one take, and the camera is very, very close to her face as she sings. Let's listen.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by. Hope was high and life worth living. I dreamed that love would never die. I dreamed that God would be forgiving. And I was young and unafraid. There was no ransom to be paid, no song and song, no wine untasted. But the tigers come at night with their voices soft. It's thunder as they tear your home.
My guests are telling me, fade. Go ahead, Gary.
This is another movie which I think, like The Hobbit, does a very good job of giving the massive core constituency what it expects. I didn't put it on my top 10 list. Probably wouldn't have been that close. I did think it was interesting, some of the choices that the director made. Most directors' instinct when they're adapting a play, let's open this baby up. Right. This guy did what movies can do, which is instead, whenever somebody had a big solo, he went in really close. Right. I just don't think that, for me, that's how those songs are meant to be received, that close to the performer. You know, these are written for the stage, meant to be flung into the back row, and this guy goes way close. I mean, it's almost like the old Warner Brothers cartoon where you go into the mouth of the opera singer and you see his glottis vibrating. So I didn't think it was exactly the right approach.
What did you think, Neil?
You know, it's interesting. NBC did a piece on their news last night that 60 million people worldwide have seen Les Mis on stage. Wow. And those people have paid certainly more than a movie ticket. I mean, you know, from $30 to $100 or more to see Les Mis since it opened in the 1980s. So it has a gigantic constituency. The question is, could it be the first, it was the largest opening for a musical in the history of movies.
Wow.
And, you know, the movie made almost $120 million worldwide and hasn't been released every place yet. I mean, can this movie make $1 billion? I mean, it's interesting, Universal made it for only $61 or $62 million. It was not one of these $200 million Chicago-type things. They made it for a reasonable amount of money. I thought Tom Hooper did a really good job of, which everybody talks about, is letting the actors, you know, not lip sync. You know, they were singing live. And to me, that was the most interesting part of the movie.
Yeah, the movie's getting a lot of credit for that. I think that this is something that movies have been doing now for 5 or 10 years. You know, like Joaquin Phoenix, for instance, with Walk the Line. They've learned the lesson that you have to have the actors singing the songs
especially if you're that close.
Right.
Well, yeah. It just makes the performance and the sound sync and persuade so much more effectively.
I thought Russell Crowe was miscast in that.
Yeah, he's not, so not much clunky of a singer. But,
well, but Russell Crowe's been in a rock band for 30 years. Everybody talks about
that's
that.
That's a different kind of singing. But yeah. I do think they say 90% of the director's job is casting. Every single other role, I think, was really pretty smartly cast. So,
let me see what Carol from Villanova has to say. Carol, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just want to say a movie that you didn't mention was The Untouchables, which I thought was a great movie. I recommended it to people in different countries, or they'd recommend it to me, and I'd already seen it. I just thought the relationship was based on a true story, and I just thought the relationship between the two main characters was just wonderful, and how they both learned a lot from each other, completely different backgrounds.
Oh, that's interesting, Carol. Neil Achtman is nodding his head.
Yeah, no, it's a French movie, a true story. It was released worldwide before it came to the United States. It made $300 million outside the United States. It's only made $10 million here. Wow. And it's a sweet little movie about a caretaker and a man in a wheelchair. And it's very sweet and very nice, and a nice movie to take a family to.
And very popular.
Called The Intouchables.
The Intouchables. Carol, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what looks like Beth from Doylestown has to say. And Beth, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm calling about a movie called Hope Springs that I actually just caught the other day, which I feel like pretty much anybody who's ever been married for 10 years should have it as, like, required viewing.
And why do you say that, Beth?
Well, because it covers so many themes and so many things that people need to hear and maybe don't want to. And it also talks about the fact that marriage, you know, is just hard, and, you know, that it requires work and that it requires
is this
coming
the to Tommy
the
Lee Jones?
Tommy
Lee
Jones.
Meryl Streep picture?
Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, and Meryl Streep. Well, Beth, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Did you
see
that, Karen?
This goes right into my group of movies that, you know, give you a realistic picture of what marriage is like. I think if I had to pick one, I'd go with This Is 40, which was a little funnier. But, very memorable and very well acted. I wouldn't be surprised.
I've never been married. I can't speak.
You take the fifth, right? But there were some interesting love stories. Silver Linings Playbook, Moonrise Kingdom, Django, you could say. I mean, there were also films that explored love.
Well, Silver Linings, I think, if you want to call it a rom-com, was so refreshing to me, because I think romantic comedy has sort of almost died of self-inflicted wounds recently.
Right.
You're starting to see the same characters, the same actors, telling the same kind of jokes, the same high-concept premise. This was a completely different socioeconomic group of people. And I think that what David Russell does so well, what he did in The Fighter in Lowell, Massachusetts, is make the community a character in his piece. And I think you really get a sense of mm-hmm. Upper Darby, a very vivid
Absolutely.
Sense of place.
I mean, you know, it's funny, but not funny. It's great for Pennsylvania. And Jack Reacher, the Tom Cruise movie, filmed entirely in western Pennsylvania. Huh. The new movie,
Promised Land
filmed entirely. Perks of Being a Wallflower with Emily Watson, right. Every shot. Silver Linings Playbook, every shot here. And then somebody told me yesterday that the World War Z, the movie with Brad Pitt about zombies, a gigantic $150, $200 million movie, which is supposed to be Philadelphia, the idiots in Harrisburg did something with the tax credit. So they shot it in Glasgow with 1,000 people. Oh my God. Those jobs did not come to Pennsylvania. But there were 4 big movies shot here this year.
I think, though, that Russell's next picture about Abscam may, in fact, be shot here.
Well, on that note, we do have to end our hour. We're going to end with Sugar Man, performed by the American singer-songwriter Rodriguez from the album Cold Fact. It was originally released in March 1970. And Neil Oxman, I know this was on your list. My thanks to you. My thanks to you, Gary Thompson, as well. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Sugar Man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams? Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar Man met a false friend on a lonely, dusty road. Lost my heart when I found it. It had turned to dead black coal. Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar Man, you're the answer that makes my questions disappear. Sugar Man, 'cause I'm weary of those double.
And again.